The opinions expressed by tonight's guest do not represent the opinions or position of Spaced Out Radio, syndicated carriers, or anyone associated with SOR Media. Listener discretion is advised. Here at Spaced Out Radio, we are about to take you higher. Broadcasting from the Rocky Mountains of Colorado to you listening around the world, this is Spaced Out Sunday with host Tessa Nicole Thomas. You can follow Tessa on our Facebook page at Spaced Out Radio, on Twitter at Tessa TNT, and you can subscribe to her YouTube channel. Go to youtube.com/Spaced Out Radio for the archive. But we break on command because women rule the world. Buckle up, space travelers. Let the countdown begin.
9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's time to go for a ride with host Tessa Nicole Thomas.
Spaced Out Radio, secure your tinfoil hats, buckle down tight, and hold on loosely as we soar over the rocky tops of the La Platas on a rocky mountain high. Get sucked into the vortex of the Four Corners and settle down snugly at mile marker 419.9 in colorful Colorado. It is Sunday, October 21st, Monday, October 22nd for those of you on the East Coast and beyond, and this is Spaced Out Radio. Hope you guys had a rockin' weekend and an awesome day and an even better evening. I am your host, Tessa TNT, and I am live tonight broadcasting from beautiful Bayfield, Colorado. We are 150,000 strong nightly on Spaced Out Radio Network, spacedoutradio.com, Spreaker, Paranormal Radio, TalkStream Live, as well as Deep Talk Radio, which you can find at deeptalkradio.com. Don't forget to head to our website, spacedoutradio.com, where you can peruse the Spaced Out Radio store and read the encounter online dealing with everything strange, paranormal, and odd. So tonight, I have a treat for all my guys and gals out there. Tonight, we have the crew of Paranormal Hunters, Astral, and Research Services. They provide emergency response for the most urgent of cases, paranormal threats to children, families that are expecting, and other high-risk clients. Our techniques may vary from client to client, but the goal is always the same, helping people reclaim their homes and lives through the compassion and education of the team. Welcome, guys. I'm so glad to have you guys on tonight.
Hi.
Thank you.
All right. So why don't we first go through and introduce each one of ourselves and what exactly our part on the team is.
Okay. I'm Sam Nguyen. I'm the kind of the head of the team, and I take care of our post-care and a lot of the research.
I'm Corey Reese. I am kind of second down the ladder, and I take care a lot of the work with the group online on Facebook. I work with a lot with the post-care reports and astral reports, so on, and kind of just making sure that everybody kind of knows who and what's going on between the team members.
logistics guy.
And I'm Donna Cunningham, and I work the Astral team.
And I'm Caden Mask. I do a little bit of everything until I finish my classes with Astral.
Awesome. Is that all of us?
That's all we have tonight. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, that's all we have tonight. So.
Well, how about you tell our listeners a little bit about how you guys met and came to be the Hunters?
Sam, I'll pass that one off to you. Go ahead and give her a shot.
I was going to pass it off to you. See how you are?
Yeah.
Well, we've passing known each buck. Other. Passing the buck. And it's, you know, only worth about 55 cents. Anyways. Well, we've known each other for a while, and it's been an absolute pleasure getting to work with them on other little things. So this opportunity came up, and we decided to pretty much go all in. You know, if we can't do what we love, you know, there's something wrong with this world. Mm-hmm. So we kind of brought our heads together, well, metaphysically speaking, since we're ways apart countrywide, and decided to kind of throw a line out there and see who else bit. And so far, we've been very lucky.
Indeed.
So I love fishing metaphors.
Yes, fishing is great.
It is. Basically, we've had the opportunity to really work to put together some, you know, what I would consider world-class people in the paranormal field. You know, mostly not so much on the boots on ground, though we probably will have some people that we work together with for that purposes. But, you know, for our astral and for our post-care, we've really had an opportunity to really put together some top-notch people, which has been, it's been awesome.
Yeah, that is great. And I can say that, you know, all the crew members that I've met so far are pretty amazing people, and everyone seems to work together really well.
We're just ironing out the kinks at this point.
So I always like to ask my guests, when was your first paranormal experience, or what led you down this path to do such things?
Oh, wow. What's with all tough questions? Okay. Go for it, Donna.
Well, I've been able to astral since I was a young child. I had the pleasures of being with another group that taught me a lot and built me up to become what I am, and gave me a lot of direction, and I discovered that I loved it and that I'm really good at it. And I enjoy helping people. So my first experiences was probably back when I was 3 or 4 years old, and they have just continued nonstop until now. I have figured out how to have a little upper hand in it and reach out to other people.
That's awesome. Who's next?
Go for it, Sam.
Okay, it appears I have a gift for Gab tonight. Well, mostly through my childhood, as far as paranormal, my father was a volunteer fireman, and my mother would tell him to go to bed early because there was going to be a fire tonight, and sure enough. Or she'd say, don't go to bed. There's going to be an early fire. And then he'd show up at the firehouse. And, you know, all his buddies are going, what's up? So there was a little arson investigation and this kind of thing. But it was just my mom. Yeah, no big deal. Just arson. No, seriously. It was just my mom. My mom was able to tune into the fact that my dad was getting into a very dangerous situation. And she was just trying to warn him. And that curse kind of rolled downhill. So been dealing with that all my life, and just being able to sense when someone's near, if that makes sense.
I remember paranormal events very young. There was a house that I was living in when I was a kid that I remember seeing basically a shadow figure run basically across the wall and down and then out through another wall, which was very interesting. And I never found myself to be afraid of any of it. It never bothered me in the slightest in that manner. I have seen UFOs. I saw one over Mount Baker here in Washington when I was a kid as well. It was basically a reddish-orange ball. It was setting right up over the peak of the mountain, and it kind of took a sharp turn one direction, then another, and then straight up and was gone. It was, you know. So I've had the opportunity to see a few different paranormal events. Haven't got to see any cryptids yet. I think that would be kind of cool to see a Bigfoot sometime. But, you know, I've just kind of been dealing with this stuff all my life until I actually got into the field. And then I was really in it. You know, I've had the chance to get a couple of EVPs and a few other things on some recording devices. And so it's been an interesting ride. I can say that much.
I guess that leaves me, huh?
Yeah.
Yes.
You're in. I got in. See, I've always had small things in the paranormal happen when I was younger. And then I decided to get into the field after I was starting at 17, going into my 18th year. And I ended up with a pretty severe attachment that lasted about 8 or 9 months, and it was just a really rough time in my life. And I decided that after I had somebody reach out and help me, that I should take what I learned and learn more so that I can help others. So here we are, almost 8 years later, and still helping folks.
Did you guys find that as kids, you know, when you tell your parents about your gifts or your experiences, were they supportive of you, or did they kind of try to keep it hush hush? What was your experience with that?
Well, me growing up, my mom was also very gifted, but she never had any kind of experiences with it as far as being able to control it. So my mom always believed me. However, I was raised up in a very religious family, and you know, it was very taboo. You didn't talk about those things, and you had to be very cautious, you know, what you said. So within the immediate family, it was well known and talked about, but we never talked about it outside the doors. You know, there was just too many frowns and too many people that didn't understand what was really going on.
For sure, there is a lot of judgment and ridicule out there. How about you, Sam?
Well, my mom had dealt with these gifts her whole life, so no one outside of the family, even the extended mom side family, was surprised. As far as going out in public and that type of thing, they already thought we were weird enough. So, well, you know, so I didn't, we were kind of taught to be the Better Homes and Gardens household. You know, it didn't matter what we did in the house. What mattered is what people perceived of us. So, you know, we talk about the ghost George that just slammed the door. It was, you know, just another Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. Me, I never told anybody any of it. I was always kind of the black sheep, I guess you could say, a little different and the rest of everybody else. And you know, I've always had a certain amount of empath that I've had to deal with throughout my life. And as it turns out, I'm starting to kind of learn how to astral A little spastic at it this point. I'm not very good at it, but I am. I can do it. I never really discussed it with any of my family. They'd have never got it. I really would have been shunned out, I'm pretty sure, if I had mentioned any of that stuff. So, yeah, for me, it was just kind of a, you never said anything.
Same. My whole family, I was raised up in a very religious home where you didn't speak about things like that. And if something did occur, you just don't mention it at all. Sweep it under the rug and don't mention it again because people will think you're crazy and we can't have that. But, it's still that way now with my family. Now with Alyssa's side of the family, they've always, almost all the females, one of the females in every generation is gifted, so her folks are a lot more accepting and think that it's cool and great what we're doing. But my family, no. I just don't even speak about it. They know what I do, and they think I'm crazy, and that's okay. It's okay for folks to think I'm crazy.
I worked long and hard to be this crazy.
That's it. I worked very hard to be this crazy.
I wave my freak flag high.
That's it. I'll go skipping with it.
Right. Okay, so
Caden's
Caden's new official team name is Skippy. Got that?
Yeah. Caden, unfortunately, you kind of live down in that area where, you know, I would say probably 80% or better don't want to know anything about that. And anything about that is probably a demon. So,
yeah, I think you're being generous with the 80%.
Probably.
It's bad.
Yeah. And, you know, he's probably along the back half of the, or the side half of the belt of the Bible Belt. And I'm at the buckle.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Here in Tennessee. So, we kind of got to be careful just a little bit.
Sure.
Yeah.
So, to you guys, what is the difference between a ghost hunter and a paranormal investigator? What do you consider yourselves as far as those titles go?
We would be more... Sam?
Would you like to answer this one?
Oh, why, yes, certainly.
Please do.
Thank you. And then I promise it'll be your turn. Okay, Corey?
Okay.
Okay. See, that's teamwork right there. Indeed. Anyway, what makes us different is we are paranormal investigators / emergency workers. Okay, emergency response. Ghost hunters, they like to go out, stir stuff up, and then they leave the house, and the poor residents of the house, they have to deal with the anger that they've just stirred up. We don't go in to cause problems. We're called in to take care of problems. Does that work, guys?
Yeah, that works.
Sure. You know, as far as I've think about it, you know, definitely like Sam was saying, we're definitely paranormal investigators, but not even so much investigators as we're paranormal emergency response, which means that we have the tools that when someone says, hey, this is happening and it's really bad, we can go in and actually take care of it. We're not really investigating so much as we're taking action, to go in and take care of it. Your ghost hunters or your ghost busters or whatever you want to call it out there. A lot of those people are going out to hot spots and, you know, trying to get EVPs and pictures and stuff. And you know, if you're going out to hot spots and doing that type of stuff, you know, good on you. You can go have fun with that, I suppose, if you want to. I still say that you got to be careful not to provoke spirits and stuff because you can get a nasty surprise that, well, we'll have to come take care of if you keep that up. But, you know, But you know, they get to go out and they go do and they have some fun and stuff, and that's great, you know. But for the most part, it's not really what our interest is. You know, our interest is you know, somebody's getting shoved or scratched or just getting the heck scared out of them. You know, that's where we come in and find out what's going on and get it taken care of so that they can have some peace and quiet in their homes and in their lives, and they can kind of take it back. And on top of that, you know, we have a post care, which takes the time to teach those clients that, you know, there's ways to take back their lives on their own after we've done what we've needed to do to take care of things, you know, gives them those ways to, protect themselves and to keep their houses cleansed and just all about be able to take care of life and go back to living it, you know, and be happy.
For sure, and it can be a hard thing to go through, especially, you know, when they don't understand it or how to grasp it or how to deal with it. So it's awesome that you guys are able to help them, you know, not only realize what's going on there, but ways to help themselves and their household to deal with or coexist with certain things.
I firmly believe in being proactive in dealing with a problem. And the most important thing that a lot of our clients need is that empowerment. And the empowerment comes from the knowledge.
Most definitely. They have to play an active role in their, you know, spiritual and psychological health there, and having the tools to be able to go forward is probably the best thing, you know, there is all the way around for that. So far we've seen amazing results with it, so I'm happy about all of that.
So agreed. This is kind of a silly question, and I think we've already kind of answered it, but you guys not only conduct investigations in Washington, are you guys nationwide or worldwide? What sort of cases do you cover?
We cover the world. We're international.
Right. Yeah, we've already had, you know, cases up, you know, in other places, Australia, you know, around the States,
Spain,
I mean, everywhere.
The UK.
Yeah, the UK.
Spain.
Yes, Spain in there. So, you know, it is worldwide. It doesn't matter, you know, where they're having a problem. Our goal is to just help them take that back and make sure they're safe. And, you know, we try to respond to, you know, immediately to anybody that asks for help. And we also, you know, do our best to educate. If we have somebody ask questions about, you know, about anything, really, we try to find as much information as we could possibly find, you know, to help them with their growth. Because, you know, education is a big key in being able to handle everything that comes at you in life.
Yeah, we even had our first case in the Portugal area, where we actually ran across something that we hadn't seen before. And that's, you know, one of the great things about our team is that we've got some great research people that were able to, you know, pull up the information on what this kind of thing was so that we could deal with it.
Oh, that was a nasty bugger.
And what was
Yes, it was.
Oh.
I'm pulling up the information now. Hold on just a second. Whee! It was actually an astral parasite. And this particular little nasty job kind of looked like an octopus. And it would latch on and, you know, pretty much cause health problems and sucking the life out of you.
Mm-hmm.
And they were able to take care of it and help our client, which was, I'm just absolutely amazed at them being able to do that.
So how exactly does one deal with a parasite or an astral parasite?
Donna?
There are several different techniques of being able to handle something like that. From energies, from different energies that you have to put into it, to multiple energies at the same time that you have to put into it. You know, you use everything in your arsenal to be able to detach it. And when they're that nasty, you don't really, you know, try to find a new home for them. You just go ahead and get rid of the bug, you know. They have had amazing results from the work that we've done and been continuing to do energy works and doing healings, remote healings. And they've had, you know, amazing results from it. And I'm really happy for them that things are kind of back in their control. But, you know, we've also discussed that, you know, when something negative happens for long periods of time, that it may start out as an attachment or anything else. But if it's not taken care of, then it can lead into something that is a physical issue. And unfortunately, she'd had the attachment long enough that it had caused some physical issues. But, you know, it's you have to heal yourself, and it takes a while to heal, you know, once you're sick. You know, you have to go through the whole process, and she's making leaps and bounds and getting better and not having as bad episodes as she was. So it's a success as far as I'm concerned, you know. And they're happy. So that is what makes it worthwhile.
One of the nice things that we have, you know, with our team is that we keep a bit of an open door policy to clients that, you know, especially the ones that have gone through serious trauma, and that, you know, we don't try to just wham bang them, shut them out, be done with them, post care gone. You know, that we actually leave that door open because of the fact of the matter is there can be residual energies and stuff that are left behind even after clearing something out. You may have to go back in and touch things up a bit. You know, you may have to go back in and do healings on the person that you were helping. Stuff like that. And it can't be done in just a real short time frame, you know. So it's one of those things that, you know, we've got that policy where we allow clients to be able to come back and say, hey, you know, there's still something going on here a little bit, and go back in. And usually it's just a little bit of residual energy, just kind of having to change those vibrations and fix things a little bit. So it's a nice thing that we have going on, and our clients truly appreciate that, you know. And there can be some issues with some of that stuff, and you know, we've got a great team that can really tell if it's somebody who's just looking for attention or if it's somebody who really needs some assistance. So I think that we have a really great team that and a really great policy on that for being able to take care of our clients.
So what Absolutely. Was your first case together?
Hold on. Let me pull up.
Well,
let me pull that information.
It's been so mean.
It's been like a tidal wave, kind of. Been trying to come up for air every once in a while, but it's kind of all blurred together. So.
Yeah, concept of whirlwind comes to mind, or tsunami. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Fast and furious.
Yes.
So,
yes. Trying to stay on top of that wave sometimes can be difficult.
Let me check my colossal book of, oh my word. Okay. We actually had on the date that we came public, we actually had a return client of Donna's that needed some more energy help as far as getting her vibrations realigned. And she was concerned about there being an attachment. And Donna just swooped right on in and started helping her with that. She also had questions about her ancestry. And with that, I was able to do a little bit of research and find out more about her ancient ancestors and what their beliefs were to kind of give her more of a sense of who she is. And she was very grateful for that.
That's awesome. We have Kevin in the chat room asking, have you ever had an entity or spirit that you can't clear or help?
I've had difficult ones, and I've always been able to clear it. Now, sometimes things find a way to come back. So you may have to go in several times and clear over and over again before you can finally get on top of it and keep it away. It seems like every time when we have something that doesn't stay gone immediately, you know, when you start going in, you start clearing repeatedly day after day, then the time span in between the time it can come back or the time, you know, that you change things, every time you're doing something different. And it's just like a combination. The first one may not work, so you go in and you change it up. And if that doesn't work, then the next one. And eventually, you'll hit the exact right combination of energies and you know, wards and every other thing you can pull out of your arsenal, and it'll work, and they won't have a bit of problem after that. But sometimes you have to work at it. It's not just go in and sweep the slate. Sometimes there is an actual process that you have to go through.
And, you know, sometimes it's getting the client to let go of what has been bothering them.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's, on a couple of cases, that's been the hardest part.
Yeah, trying to, you know, make them realize or, you know, learn to self-empower themselves and not to fear or let this thing get them down. That's a really important part.
Well, a lot of times they get to doing a codependency thing. You know, mm-hmm. sometimes they get attachments that they become codependent on, and you know, one feeds the other. So when you pull that attachment away, they suddenly fill a void. And because growth is uncomfortable, people would rather slide back into a negative way of operation because it's comfortable. So you have to really work with them, be by them, and educate them. And, you know, eventually you'll come through the other side. You just have to put the time into it.
Yeah, the biggest point is being patient with the client. And, you know, patience takes time.
For sure. Sam, Yvonne in the chat room is asking, do you do Ancestry?
I don't do Ancestry.com, you know, that type of thing. I can look up lineage. Let's say, you know, you're Black Irish and you want to know more about the cultural aspects of that type of thing. My Google foo is strong.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to research, so you know, I'd be more than happy to help out as far as that type of ancestry goes. Unfortunately, I just don't have the resources to do the full on. Here's your great 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 third removed cousin. I just don't have that resource.
Yeah, I think that's funny that you brought up Black Irish, because my dad always claimed to be Black Irish, and then my uncle would come up and say, there is no such thing, which there actually is.
Yes.
So that was funny.
Yes.
Yeah, it would be Scotsman that fled to Ireland at one point, and then those were considered Black Irish.
Well, they also had, you know, Spanish fleets or whatnot, and they'd land there and then, you know, cohort with the
right.
females of the island or whatnot, and then you got the darker skinned Irish.
And the darker haired.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Black Irish tend to have a like an olive almost complexion and dark browns and black hair.
Yeah, my dad always had dark skin tone, even in his end times when he was in the house all the time, never getting any sun. He always just had that dark skin tone, black hair, and his eyes were so dark brown they looked black. It was pretty interesting.
And the anthropological of the physical reasons of why that kind of happened in that area is also just fascinating. And I love to dig into the culturals and the physicals to figure out why.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you're never going to see a lion in the Arctic. Why? And there's a lot of good reasons why not. Anyways, I digress.
Yeah.
Well, we also have on the astral side of things, when you talk about lineage, you know, we run into curses and stuff like that. Sometimes it's necessary on the astral plane to kind of trace that back to where that came from. And so we have members of our astral team that can actually trace back lineage of where that curse came from on the astral plane to be able to break it.
And a lot of times it, you know, we really need to know where the client comes from, both within, you know, their family and the landscape of where they actually lived, to be able to suss out what the actual problem is.
So what was the Oh, go ahead, Corey.
I was just going to say, it's a very complex job, actually.
Whee!
Yeah, it sure sounds like it, but I mean, it can be fun at times, but also quite draining.
Oh, yes.
Coffee is my friend.
Right?
It is.
Must increase caffeine intake.
No. Well, you know, that's the only way my husband survives.
Yeah. So what was the most haunted location or person that you guys have investigated and helped? Can you kind of paint a picture for us?
That's your avenue, Donna.
Well, that's a... We have, in past times, we've dealt with curses. Recently, recently, I haven't really had that hard a time.
I think your house was probably, when you lived back in Kansas, is one of the worst.
Yes, it probably is.
Well, what was going on there? We're curious. Inquiring minds want to know.
Inquiring minds want to know. Terrible attachments. It sets on a plot of land that... the Indians had there. It's right there real close to the reservation. So there's several deaths that have taken place in that area. Portals open, you know, and then it seems like anytime anything kicks up around there, it can't be just one thing at a time. You have that whole tsunami come down, because then you end up with, you know, there's some sort of alien activity as well going on along with the entity and the spirit. And everything else. So it becomes a very complex and a multi-person task to be able to handle that situation. And then there's an immense amount of shielding and healings that have to take place afterwards just to stabilize the situation, because if you don't, it spirals out of control, and it seriously affects everybody's psyche. You know, everybody is depressed and crying and not knowing why, and you know, they can just feel the weight on them. And seems like whenever we go in and we clear that situation, there's an immediate response, and people start feeling more back to their normal selves and things like that. But that seems be the most difficult place, and I can't say that it's, you know, if it's just because it was home or if it's just because it's really got a lot going on.
That place has got a lot going on. It's insane.
Just a little bit.
So how exactly, you know, because there's a lot of different variations from person to person, but how exactly do you deal with a native spirit that's, you know, dealing with unrest?
Well, the unrest part of it, you know, a lot of the guardians and that, you know, they're there to protect the spirits that are there. And when they start feeling that things are changing or people are disrespecting the lands or their spirits or anything else, they have a tendency to get very upset about it. Most generally, most of the time, natives are easy to deal with if you just make a peace offering to them and acknowledge them and give them respect and kind of explain a little bit of what's going on. They'll settle down. It may not last forever, but it definitely will calm things at that time. And it sometimes really just depends upon the tribe you're dealing with. Some of them have completely different cultural views and thoughts than others. And you have to kind of do some research and find out what you're dealing with. So even on the astral side of it, I mean, we can go in and we can see what we're dealing with, but, you know, then we have to come back and we have to go, okay, let's do some research and find out what we're dealing with. And the hardest thing for me is I really wish I could take an astral picture and bring it back so that I can look it up, because I can keep the picture in my head, but I have a short circuit between my brain and my hand, and I can't get sick people wrote out right. So, you know, it's stuck in my head, and I have to really search to try to find what I'm looking for and relate it over. Once you get to doing a little research on it, you kind of get a feel for what's required to kind of settle things down. And sometimes you go in there and you just have to go by instinct. Your instincts are probably your strongest tool.
Yeah, I believe the gut is, you know, your most important tool to take in when you are doing an investigation. For me, my gut has never led me wrong. Other parts of my body have, as far as my mind, my heart, or whatever. But my gut has always been true and led me in the right direction.
And most definitely.
So Robin in the chat room is saying, I would like to know why you think there is a difference between paranormal investigators and ghost hunters. More in depth, where I come from, I say, I respect your space and not here to do any harm. And then he proceeds with his investigation.
Well, some of it is semantics. You know, because what one person will call one thing, another person calls something different. Generally, when I speak of ghost hunters, and I'm not saying that all ghost hunters are bad. I never said that even for a second. You know, there are plenty of ghost hunters that want to go out and mingle with the spirits, that do no disrespect to any of them, treat them fairly, with respect, because they have an understanding that, you know, they were once people, you know, living people. You know, you'd want to treat them as you'd want to treat any person, you know, give them a little respect. But, you know, there are, unfortunately, a lot of what I consider ghost hunters that they watch, you know, some of our great paranormal TV, and decide to emulate that, and they cause a lot of issue. A lot of times they scare the heck out of their own selves because they end up getting kind of bit by something that they didn't really expect. You know, because they don't know how to protect themselves or anything else. But, you know, when I define ourselves as, you know, investigators, you know, it is just that we aren't going to hot spots. We aren't going out to get pictures, EVPs and stuff for evidence of whatever. We're going out to investigate an issue. We're emergency investigators. So we're going out to find out what an issue is with a client who is having serious problems and we're there to take care of it. We're not there to have any problems. Now, taking care of it can look like a lot of different things. Taking care of it could be, you know, mitigating, which means that, you know, you got a spirit in the house who's basically, you know, kind of upset, not realizing that they're scaring the heck out of people. They're just trying to communicate with the others that are there. And, you know, the people that are that live there, you know, are weirded out by the whole thing because they don't exactly understand what's going on. So you go in and you mitigate and you talk to the client, you know, do you mind if this spirit stays here? They mean you no harm. They just wanted to communicate, you know, and if both the spirit and the client are happy with it, well, mitigation's successful. Nobody's leaving. Nobody's scared anymore. Things are taken care of. You know, there's times that you go in where there is some serious negative entity that not necessarily was a spirit or anything, but it's just there to cause havoc. Mm-hmm. Those usually just get rid of them. You know, they're just gone. You know, we don't provoke anything to do anything. We go in, we find it, you know, we don't need to provoke it. We can see it on that astral plane. We just take care of it. Done, gone, handled. You know, there's times that you run into spirits that, you know, don't really realize they're dead. They're kind of creating havoc. You know, you go in there, you realize that it was a person at one point. They're just scared because they don't understand what's going on. Because, you know, tragic deaths, you know, sudden tragic deaths can leave a spirit stuck. You know, leave it stuck somewhere where they don't know what's going on. They don't really even really realize they're dead. And, you know, it gives us an opportunity to go in and say, look, you've passed on. You're no longer in the physical living realm. You know, and there's a way for you to go and be happier. And a lot of most of the time, it's just no problem. They're ready to pass over at that point and go to the other side, you know, where things are better for them. So, you know, there's many instances of what, you know, taking care of something looks like. You know, there's a lot of people out there, period, that think it, you know, basically everything is a demon if it's, you know, if it's anything other than, you know, just nothing happening. And, you know, the fact of the matter is those are actually pretty rare. Mm-hmm. There are some demons. You do get some demon cases, but they're rare. And, you know, generally when you do, it's one of those you don't mentally mess around with it. You just take care of it. It's gone. Make sure it go away. And I make that sound really easy, but it's not always necessarily really easy. But that's, I guess, I hope I explained that a little better.
Well, the other thing is, and I just wanted to add that we also have to take a step back and look at where the client is coming from in the standpoint of culturally. You know, with this particular client, this is their base culture. You know, okay, it makes sense that they're calling this particular spirit a demon because everything that is, you know, beyond the normal realm is a demon in their culture. And that's something that's very important to us because we realize that, you know, to help the client, we have to understand the client.
Definitely.
And also another thing that kind of, you know, makes it not ghost hunting or anything like that is that we don't randomly pick a hot spot. We don't pick a place that's haunted or that's got activity. We don't pick a place. It's the clients that come to us and say, I need help, you know. So we don't have any control as far as where we're going to go. We go to where the client is, and that's how, you know, we help them through the plane. You know, but it's not something that we sit down and we go, oh, let's go to this place because, you know, there's paranormal activity there. So the investigating part of it is that, you know, once your client is protected, you want to investigate as far as what you have there and, you know, what it wants, you know, how you can get rid of it, you know, how, you know, if it's actually coming from the client, from their home, or if there's something close by that is allowing injury. And, you know, that's just a natural navigational point for them to go to, is to that home or something like that. It can be a portal next door or out in the yard, you know, anything like that. But it's still, you know, it's something that's randomly chosen because people come to us.
Well, Char in the chat room was asking, do you guys ever have people that fake a haunting?
Yes, that happens. And, mm-hmm. you know, those are the ones that are the attention seekers. And you can usually tell, you know, once you go in and you look and you're like, you know, there's really nothing here. You know, you change some vibrations. You know, but the ones that keep coming back over and over and over and over and over, that nothing's ever helping, nothing's ever doing anything, or something like that. When we can't see it from the astral plane, you know, that's the number one big red flag, and you know, we know that that it's something that's for attention.
Do you guys tend to get a lot of those, or are they kind of here and there?
Here and there. Once in a while. We haven't really encountered a whole lot of them.
That's good. Yvonne in the chat room was asking, how does the team handle case demand versus health concerns? What are risks in astral traveling?
What are risks in astral traveling?
Yeah, astral traveling a lot, she said.
And a lot is you will absolutely wear yourself out. It is to every fiber of your body, you are drained and you have to rest then. When you're on that plane for extended amounts of time, unless you're drawing energy from somewhere else, it can take you down to the point that, you know, you're drained, and it takes you a day or two to recoup from that. One of the hazards of being on the astral plane is if you're in a combat situation and if you take a hit from something on that plane, you can carry those injuries back, and, you know, those injuries come back with you. But they hurt on every fiber of that area instead of just having a bruise on the surface. You know, the bone, the muscle, every part of it feels, you know, injured. And it can be dangerous if you don't know what you're doing. You know, not only that, if you're not properly protected, you can bring back attachments and you can bring back spirits. And there are precautions you have to take to protect yourself.
And it's something that I am constantly worried about and stressing with the team, in the fact that, you know, we need to get everyone up to speed so we can delegate. And I'm starting my training for astral, so we can spread it out more, because, you know, it's not just a team, it's a family. And I want to make sure that everyone in our family is taken care of properly and we're sharing the load.
Yeah, that's a big thing, you know, within hunters. We, you know, it is just like a big old family. And, you know, somebody, you know, like myself, that is not very experienced in the astral, those that are extremely well at astral, they make sure that they take the time out to show, you know, people like me on the team how to do stuff properly and safely. That way we learn the correct way so we can be of better service on the team.
It's one of the biggest things we stress on our team is being safe, you know, all around, because none of us, you know, this is all volunteer. Nobody's getting paid for anything. We don't charge for anything. You know, this is all volunteer for the love of what we do. So we stress very much being safe, being careful, you know, and it's we work really well together, because, you know, if one of our astral members go in to check something out and they see that it's going to be a mess, they pull back and they grab another astral member or two to come in to help them, you know, just to work as an absolute team, to watch each other's back and to take care of each other. Because, you know, the reality is, you know, most all of us here have got lives of one form or another, whether it's jobs or family or something else going on in our physical world. So we have to be careful what we're doing out there so that we can make sure that we can take care of the things we need to back here, you know, physically.
Nice. Absolutely.
So have you guys ever heard of anyone actually perishing while doing astral?
Not that I have heard of, but I haven't. I don't know of all aspects. You know, I'm sure that there's elements and things that happen that, you know, you just have no answers for. Somebody that does the astral, you know, a doctor can't see those things, and they can't determine those things. And, you know, the person might be fine one day, and then all of a sudden they're gone. And, you know, how do you know? What do you, I mean, how do you really know? That's just kind of the way it is. Science hasn't caught up with everything.
Right. Yeah, and well, I have to interrupt you guys because we got to go to our first break, but we'll continue with that when we come back right after these messages.
Looking for nighttime adventure? Old school radio that delves into everything out of the norm. Then check us out at Spaced Out Radio. This is Dave Scott. Every Monday through Friday, starting at 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern, we're going to take you on a wild ride ranging from conspiracies to true crime and every ghost, alien, and Sasquatch story in between. We're always live, and we're always interactive with you. So join us at spacedoutradio.com, where together, we own the night.
Hey, guess what? You can now get your brand new Spaced Out Radio swag at spacedoutradio.com. We've brought the store back with all new items for you to pick out and pick up for yourself, your family, or friends. T-shirts, hoodies, hats, we got it all. All you have to do is head to our website and click on store. Choose what you want and it's shipped to you. The Spaced Out Radio store is right there for you. Come shop with us at spacedoutradio.com. Then we can own the night together.
So, you love talk radio? Then you'll love TalkStreamLive.com. TalkStream Live is always on 24/7 with the best streaming talk shows. Find your favorite talkers and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on mobile with any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store.
On the first Tuesday of every month, I encourage you to come along for a journey with me, Geraldine Orozco, on The Spiritual You. Together, we will take a look at how to access the highest expression of yourself and change your life, consciousness, ET contact, health, and wellness. We can talk about it all. So come along for a spiritual ride with me, Geraldine Orozco, on The Spiritual You, only on Spaced Out Radio.
Coming soon to our website, spacedoutradio.com, is the SOR Space Travelers Club. For just $5 a month, you can get into a private area on our site where you can hang with other listeners in our chat room, post in our forum, and check out a bunch of exclusive content and store that won't be found anywhere else, including a nightly after-show party with Dave. It's going to be the best $5 a month you're going to spend. The SOR Space Travelers, only at spacedoutradio.com.
Are you tired of being blocked, shadow banned, or placed in jail for simply posting your thoughts on social media? Social Media Freedom can take care of that for you. Social Media Freedom is the newest and one of the best free new apps that allows you the freedom to post what you want, when you want. It takes seconds to download from your app store. Come join the tribe at Social Media Freedom. It's time to set yourself free.
Visit purpleplates.com today. For over 40 years, the Purple Energy Plates have been delivering amazing results for their many customers. Inspired by the great genius Nikola Tesla, the harmony, healing, and energetic effects of the plates have proven over and over to be beneficial and often miraculous to thousands of customers. Check their site for daily specials and choose from their many energy products. You won't be sorry. Visit them today at purpleplates.com.
If you're heading to Vancouver, make sure you stop by the official bar of Spaced Out Radio, the Moose Vancouver. It's the place to party in YVR. At the corner of Nelson and Granville, the Moose Vancouver is always up to speed with a kitchen staff that serves great food, all food on the menu, $6.95 to $8.95. There's a reason the Moose Vancouver is recognized as one of the hottest spots on the West Coast. Get your horns up for the Moose Vancouver.
Hey, this is Canadian Paranormal Investigator Mike Moore. The third Wednesday of every month, I'll be teaming up with Dave Scott to bring you Ghosts of the Great White North. Each month, we will bring on guests from across Canada to discuss their ghostly encounters. Canada is a paranormal hotbed with stories you've never heard, so we're going to bring them to you. So get comfy on your Chesterfield, grab a donut, and join us, eh?
A timepiece is a reflection of who you are. And what better way to show off the real you than with an Escape watch? Escape is a lifestyle brand accessorizing your days and nights. Choose to escape and create the life of discovery that you deserve. Dream, play, unite with your own personalized Escape watch. Head to escapewatches.com. There is no time like the present to enjoy your escape. Use promo code SMF2017 for your 20% discount today.
We're bringing scientific thought to the paranormal. Hi there, this is Spaced Out Radio scientist Chris Cogswell. Join me, Chris Zuger, and Dave Scott the second Wednesday of every month, where we break down the who from the woo when it comes to everything paranormal. We'll investigate and try to bring sensible answers to those straight and sometimes outlandish questions people have. Hey, not everything has an answer, but we'll do our best. Listen in to Reality Paranormal only on Spaced Out Radio.
Hello, this is your guitar man, Ron Bumblefoot Thaw, and I have to tell you, I love the response I get for Little Brother is Watching from Spaced Out Radio fans. It's amazing how music can inspire and make people think deeper about what's going on in the supernatural world. You can head over to my website, bumblefoot.com, to check out my music, my guitar workshops, my touring, even check out some of the hot sauces that I'm working on. And make sure you keep on listening, because with Spaced Out Radio, you know Little Brother is Watching.
Looking for a place to advertise at a very reasonable cost? Look no further than Spaced Out Radio. SpacedOutRadio.com has an advertising tab that you can click to check out our daily, weekly, and monthly packages to play on the radio, or our website, including social media. From commercial spots to banners, we have it all. Check out our competitive pricing today.
You can follow Tessa on Twitter at TessaTNT, on our YouTube channel, Spaced Out Radio, and our website is spacedoutradio.com. Now, back to Spaced Out Weekend host, Tessa Nicole Thomas.
Here's a sound again, voices dancing in my...
Hey guys, welcome back. So great to have you on the show tonight with your listening ears. Tonight we have Paranormal Hunters and Astral Research Services, and we have Corey, I believe, is it Bonnie or Donna?
Donna.
Donna and Sam. Caden had to go to bed because he's got to work early in the morning, but I'm excited to have you guys on.
Hello.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
No worries. So we had left off talking about astral, and I had to interrupt. I think, Sam, were you jumping in to say something right before we ended?
Thank you. I just wanted to add to what Donna and Corey had said is, unless you're paying really staunch attention to your physical health, you know, you have to be careful with your health if you're going to be going into astral. And anything that's going to cause trauma to you in astral, as Donna said earlier, you can carry over into the real, into our normal space, so to speak. So, you know, hypothetically, could somebody die in astral? Sure, if they've got a weak heart. It all boils down to what you bring back with you and your physical conditioning.
Yeah, I think someone else had said you can also, you know, receive an aneurysm or whatnot doing such work. Like a heart attack and aneurysm are basically the two main things that could happen in that astral realm.
Well, oh, yeah. I suppose it's possible, but, you know, and I haven't heard directly of anybody dying in astral, but I've heard that it can happen. And, you know, it goes back to what Donna was saying earlier, is that you take a smack in astral, you can bring it back with you physically, because you got to realize that your astral body is a part of your physical body. So, you know, see, unlike remote viewing is where you're just kind of sending your conscious mind out to take a look at something. You're not, there's no part of you there. You're just looking at something. In astral, we're actually sending our astral bodies out there to do that type of work. So if you take a hit there, you take a hit a lot of times physically too. So, I mean, if you were caught unaware or weren't well prepared enough to go out in astral and you took a shot that could kill you, it would likely kill you physically.
Let's see. Go ahead.
I have physically come. I have come out of astral before, after being in combat, and had physical marks on my body from where I was, you know, either scratched or hit or things like that. You know, I've had scratches. I've had, you know, big bruises show up. That, you know, I know for a fact I didn't hit anything or bump into anything. And, you know, so, you know, I know that they can be carried over. You know, I've physically had those things happen to me, which taught me not to get hit in the astral plane. So.
Right. Bob and weave.
Sorry.
Phoenix in the chat room was saying, many people believe that astral traveling is evil and that it is an occult practice. So do you care to explain why people think that, she asks?
I'll take this one. You know, it really comes down to what people's faiths are. And, you know, there are certain faiths out there that basically that is exactly what they teach. They teach that anything isn't of their faith or what they say is evil or is a demon or is anything like that. And you know, it's unfortunate because it, you know, it's really not. I mean, obviously, you know, we're out there doing what we can to help people. We're not hurting anybody. So it really comes down to a belief systems is why that comes about like that. And it's, you know, some people are so staunchly grounded in those beliefs that they don't ever look at anything else. And it's unfortunate, and it happens, and there's nothing you can do about it, and you just basically have to go on about your life, and we just continue doing what we're doing. You know, if that's what they want to believe, well, then that's what they're going to believe. And the thing of it is there's nothing really that's going to change their mind about it. Sometimes you'll get one of those particular people that become a client because they have an issue, and you go in and you take care of the issue, and it actually does change their mind, and they realize that it's not all what they thought it was. But most of the time, when the belief systems are that strong in that way, there's nothing you can do to change their mind. So we just continue to do what they do, and they'll believe what they want to believe. Not much you can do about it.
Char is asking, if someone astrals, can people see you?
I know that animals can see me. I have, you know, I've had instances where, you know, dogs have been able to follow me around the room and and things like that. Sometimes people might think they see me. What they do know is they can feel my energy. I do allow them to feel my energy. And I usually always explain to them that the sensation that they're about to feel is my energy. So that, you know, because it can be freaky sometimes. It can freak somebody out because it is a very odd sensation. So I try to always explain to them, you know, what they're going to feel when I start doing the energy work. That way they're already expecting it to catch them off guard, and it keeps their mindset calm. And I don't really know. I haven't ever really had anybody tell me they could actually physically see me, though.
I do remember some discussion one time where they were, one astral person went to somebody's place and they were having a battle with whatever it was that was there. And the client said that they could see the curtains being knocked around and a few things like that in their house. So, you know, I guess in a way you could a little bit in that realm.
Well, that's awesome. Sir Robin was asking, can you meet people on the astral plane?
Oh, yeah. Well, my sis and I, we can meet each other on the astral plane, and you know, we can speak to each other on the astral plane. I can see other people that can astral there. So, yes, you could. That has happened.
And then Char was asking, is astral travel the same as bilocation?
Bilocation is a little bit different, but it's in a similar realm. Bilocation, sometimes a person can actually show up there. They're more of a ghostly figure, but they can physically touch or alter things. I have had instances where those things have happened. But that is an interesting question, and I think I'll have to do a little further digging to get a proper answer for that.
Well, and I can add to that a little bit. Bilocation can be looked at in two realms. You can bilocate in astral, which you can astrally be in two places at once, which is another very draining thing that can happen. And there have been a very few actual people who could physically bilocate to where that they were literally physically in two different places. It's pretty rare, at least anymore. You don't see it too often, but you know that. But as for astral being bilocating, no. It just means that your astral body is going to another place. You're astraling to somewhere, but you're not bilocating doing that.
And Bonnie was saying that Graham saw you guys in Australia when you had astraled there.
Yes, he was. He was actually able to see both of us and our guardian. So,
oh, that's awesome.
Yes, he was able to see that.
Sam, were you going to say something? I'm sorry.
Yeah, but I realized that I might be putting my foot in my mouth, and I really don't like the taste of a size 9. So I stopped.
Good to go. So Char was wondering if some of these shadow people are people astral traveling.
Nine times out of 10, they're not. Shadow people are a little bit different creature. No, I would say not, in my opinion of that. Shadow people usually kind of terrify people, and you know, there's usually a lot of sleep paralysis and stuff like that. And as far as I know, there's nobody that can really cause sleep paralysis on the astral plane, so I'm going to have to say that's a no.
Do you think that all shadow people are, you know, like these dark entities like people think, or do you think sometimes they could be a spirit trying to form from whatever energy they gather in that area, and sometimes they come out as like a white mist, sometimes it's a black mist, or do you think that has to do with their alignment?
I think it has a lot to do with their alignment. Usually people that see shadow, usually if it's a shadow person, you have no doubts in your mind of what its intent is. You can feel the negativity coming off of it. And, you know, it doesn't leave you wondering if it's a spirit trying to materialize or what it is. Its intents are kind of broadcast, and the vibration levels are usually pretty low at that time.
So let's give you a little bit of a break on this astral stuff, because I know it can be draining, but so many people think it's unethical to charge for investigations or help. Do you charge, and what is your opinion on this subject?
I'll take this one. No, we do not charge. And personally, I don't believe in charging because, you know, you're dealing with a situation that for a lot of these people, this is their worst nightmare. This is something that they can't simply call 911 and get help with. So they've finally got brave enough to reach out to try to get some help for their family. And I simply don't believe in profiting from someone's desperation.
Well, you know, the other thing of that too is that generally when you buy something, when you pay for something, you're paying for some type of thing, of a physical thing that you can hold in your hand, or a guarantee of something. You know, the fact of the matter is that when you're dealing with a paranormal, there are no guarantees. There are no guarantees for nothing. We could have some of the best people on in astral and research and everything in the world, and we may come across a case at some point that there's nothing we can do. You know, and the fact of the matter is that things can come back. You know, you may have to go in again. So there's an ethics part of it there where, you know, it's, you can't really, you shouldn't charge for something that you can't guarantee, that a product that you can't put in the customer's hand. You should never charge for that. It's just an unethical thing to do.
And before we go any further, this is why Corey is like the logistics guy, because he's so smart.
There
Sir
you
Robin,
go.
Yeah. Sir Robin was asking, do you take donations?
If somebody was to offer us a donation, you know, just out of the blue. Not for us working with him or anything else like that, but just to help us do what we do, sure. Mm-hmm. But we would never ask for a donation. We would never mention a donation. We would never mention money of any sort. Because the moment you do that, you have just charged for your services. So, you know, if somebody was to come up to me or to come onto the group and say, hey, I don't need any help, but I'd like to donate to you guys if you guys need a little money to help do what you do. Okay, that's fine. You know, I'd be okay with that. But, you know, no other way.
So if what you he help said, them with a case and they say that they want to donate to you because they really appreciate what you did or whatnot, you still wouldn't take it?
No.
Okay. Sam, were you going to say something?
Just what he said.
No.
Ditto.
It's pretty much what he said, because he said it so well. I have nothing to add.
Yeah.
So, do you guys investigate crypto cases and UFOs?
I work on alien cases. And we just haven't had any kind of cryptid case come up. I don't know if we would be, if we have the resources at this point to go to places to actually investigate the cryptid cases. because it would probably require more of a boots on the ground ordeal. But the alien cases, I work the alien cases a lot. I still, you know, will help with, you know, stopping abductions and helping people with that. And we, you know, have resources that we can contact if there's more information needed that I don't have, which I don't know everything there is about aliens. There's a lot of them, and they're complicated. So that's kind of where I'm at with aliens.
You know, with UFOs kind of go with aliens, so yes, we would obviously investigate UFOs as well, too. Basically, you know, anything that we can investigate astrally, for the most part, I think probably the only thing we won't do is missing persons because it's so tricky. But basically, you know, anything that we can investigate astrally, if somebody really needs it, you know, there's some type of emergency to it. And if we're not slammed with emergency cases, you know, something came in that wasn't quite so emergency, you know, we'd look in it into it too. But you know, like Donna said, you know, for boots on ground stuff, you know, if we've got somebody that we work with that could do it, sure. You know, real locally here we might be able to do some stuff, but most of the stuff that we do is actually astrally.
So, have you guys ever done any boots on the ground cases?
Together, no.
No, I have done boots on ground. I have done boots on ground cases with other groups that I've been with in the past, and I'm fair at it, I would say. You know, I don't have as much experiences as some others, even some friends of mine that. Do pretty much just boots on ground stuff. You know, I enjoyed it. But pretty much usually, even with the boots on ground, we were working with an astral team. So, you know, we had astral team backup, and it worked out really, really well.
So when you do boots on the ground, what is the first thing you pack when you're gearing up? Like, what sort of equipment do you like to use, or do you bring equipment?
Well, you know, I've always kind of said, as I look at things, you don't have to have the most expensive toys to do it. It's kind of fun to have the most expensive toys to do it, but you don't have to. I mean, my case, if I go into it right now, I have a few digital cameras. One of them actually is a full spectrum, but I didn't pay a lot for it. I have a digital recorder. I have an SB7 spirit box, which are fairly inexpensive. I've got a night vision monocular, which I actually got a long time ago, so I didn't spend much money on it. You can find a lot of this stuff, you know, online pretty inexpensively. Sometimes you can find it even in pawn shops pretty inexpensively and stuff like that, but... And I've got a flashlight and a headlamp, and I carry sage in my box for being able to help clients with you know, keeping their homes cleansed. I do carry rubber gloves in my box because you never know what you're going to run into when you go into someplace.
Sam, did you have something you were going to say?
Yeah, Corey touched on it there towards the end. The question was, you know, what was the first thing? Always a smudge kit, because I believe in going into a potential active environment fully cleansed and shielded myself before going in. So, you know, whatever energy I might have with me from a bad day is cleansed off of me before I enter that environment. So really my first thing is a smudge kit for protection, my personal protection. But that's just me.
PTO in the chat room was asking, is there a difference between astral, which I consider earthly travel, and spirit, which I consider to be more galactic and universal travel?
In the astral, you don't have any limits. You can go anywhere. It doesn't have to be earthbound. It's a strange sensation to do it when you actually take yourself off of the planet, but you can. So it doesn't require that you stay earthbound when you go into astral. It's just something that most people prefer to do because it's familiar. You know what you're dealing with.
So as far as kits go, do any of you carry holy water? A.K.A.
Yes.
Holy water? Just kidding. Ow, it burns. Get it off. Oh.
Ow, ow, ow. Yes, I do. I also have rosaries. I have items that will pertain to most individuals' religions, simply because, I never know what I'm going to run into. So I like to have a multi-versatile tongue-tangled. I like to have a very versatile kit along with the electronics of the kits.
And me personally, I think it all comes down to whatever your faith may be. If you want to have, it depends on the kit you're talking about. Now, if you're talking about your investigative kit, it's going to be pretty much my electronics, my different stuff like that, plus, my smudging stuff, because that's, my belief systems, that's what I go with. If you're going to carry a kit for post-care type stuff, then yes, what Sam said is definitely what you would want to do. You wouldn't want to have, holy water and rosaries and different stuff like that, because that will be the stuff that whatever that person particular faith is will work with them. And being in the field that we're in, we have to be very conscientious of other people's faiths, and we have to work with them within their faiths, no matter what ours are, to be able to make sure that they can take back their lives and their homes and take control of that in the way that they know how or would know how and would feel comfortable with.
For sure. And, people do put a lot of weight behind their faith. And I'm not Catholic, but I do believe in a lot of tools that they use, and I have faith in those. I do have a St. Michael crucifix or rosary that I would wear. And oddly enough, the golden Jesus popped off of it somewhere. And then one time I had an attachment follow me home, and I'm going through my emails, and all of a sudden I feel burning on the side of my waist, and I'm thinking perhaps when I was outside smoking, like a spider had gotten on me and bit me or something. And then I lifted it up, and I saw two scratches along my pant line, and it just got worse and worse and worse. And so I grabbed the holy water, which I hadn't used yet, and sprayed it on there, and within like 2 minutes it disappeared. And then it happened again 2 days later, this time leaving three scratches, and I sprayed it on there, and it took a lot longer for it to go away at that point. But after that, I didn't have, it never came back. It never scratched me again. But that was pretty weird. Like, if you've ever been scratched, like the weird, odd feeling that you get within your body and your mind and such, kind of like a drug's been introduced into your body. It was quite scary because I'd never been subjected to that before, but that was interesting. Have you guys ever had an experience like that?
Well, the biggest thing, me personally, I really haven't, but my shielding is really good. Not saying that mine's the best in the world, but it is really good. The other thing is grounding. shielding and grounding is one of the things that will help considerably keep from having something kind of follow you home. But, you know, in the instance of what you're talking about, you have to have, you know, a strong belief in whatever it is that you're using to keep things clean and keep things away. Because if you don't have, you know, strong faith in what you're doing, then it's just not going to work. So that's kind of the nuts and bolts of it.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting. Go ahead, Donna.
Yeah, back when I was much younger and inexperienced and going to places I knew I shouldn't have been going to because I didn't know what I was doing, I had a few encounters and ended up with scratches and stuff like that. And like you said, it's a whole body, spiritual, you know, every part of you feels affected by it. And, you know, it is scary. And I was luckily able to get rid of the attachment, but still it left an impression. You know, it scared the holy cow out of a lot of us at the time.
Right.
So. Yeah. And I mean, the time that I got scratched, I was a little kid and I didn't get those negative feelings at all. It felt to me almost like a cat scratch trying to get me away from something. It felt protective and warmth when I got the scratch when I was a kid. Kind of trying to herd me in a different direction.
Yeah, for sure. Like some sort of animal guardian or something. That's interesting.
Right.
Well, you had another.
Oh, go ahead, Corey.
I was going to say, you had another question here in the chat room that I kind of wanted to touch on a little bit, too, since we're kind of in that realm. And the question was, and I was trying to find it here again. Let me see here. I can't find it exactly. But the question was, is do ghosts have or know what religion is? The answer to that is yes. You know, what you'll find is a lot of stuck spirits that don't want to cross over. It's because of religion itself. They have such a strong belief that they didn't meet up to the standards of whatever the religion was that they're afraid to cross over because they're afraid of punishment. So yes, there definitely is spirits out there that have an understanding or remembrance of what their religion was when they were living, and it sometimes causes a real problem with getting them, you know, the chance to pass over to the other side where they can, you know, have some peace.
Yeah, and like you said, that is a big reason why some of them are stuck here. One of the ghosts that we had encountered that actually did come through on one of these crazy apps. Like, I think that's the only successful one that we've had on an app, but she came through, said her full name, Walter Intention Death, Sharp Tool, so on and so forth. We gave the information to the museum curator. He had been calling her Emmy all along, which there is a ghost there named Emmy, but she's a little girl. He did his homework, turned out her name was Kate Johnson. She was a soiled dove, a.k.a. prostitute, back in the 1800s, and had fallen in love with this firefighter. He snuck her on the train to elope. Being that she was a working girl, she had been with the brakeman, and the brakeman found them together. A fight ensued, and he stabbed the firefighter to death. Well, she was Catholic, so she believed in purgatory. She moved on to California, trying to move on with her life, but she ended up ending her own life by ingesting muriatic acid or something terrible like that. And then she was stuck on this immigrant car, aka train car, that was back in the back of the museum, quartered off because he was so protective of her, this museum curator. But it was very cool to, you know, for her to come through and tell her story, and then we were able to find and back that up. And out of all things, to release her, this Catholic school class came in, and the museum curator was going to tell them, you know, a shorter version of the story, but ended up telling them the whole story. showed them the train car. And, you know, when you walk on a train car, it kind of goes back and forth. So he's walking off, and he feels like they're behind him, following him, but they're not. He turned around, they're not there, and he all of a sudden hears them saying this prayer. And I guess it was a prayer of release from purgatory, which some people say doesn't exist, but there's a lot of stuff in the Catholic Church that does exist that we're not privy to. But after that, she was gone for about 3 months. Due to her free agency, she was able to come back and continue to protect Emmy from the brakeman who's there, and I have pictures of all of those guys. So that was an interesting investigation and a good outcome on that part. But religion can really, you know, hold you back as far as keeping you here in this world or keeping you stuck or whatnot, because you believe so wholeheartedly and with all your spirit that, you know, this is true. And so then you kind of trap yourself. So BTO was asking, how far have the guests traveled? I'm not sure if he means, I'm pretty sure he's talking astrally.
Yeah, that's kind of, I saw that too, and I would assume that that would be the truth too. I know that, most of our astral team has been pretty much all different places throughout the world, but I will defer this to Donna.
It's hard to say where you're at when you just go straight up. Once you get out there and you're actually in astral and you're just away from the earth, it seems, you can see all kinds of things. And I cannot tell you how far or where at, but it... it's amazing looking down at what the earth looks like from astral.
Yeah, I could imagine. It's got to be beautiful.
It is. It is. And there's strange things out there. I can say that.
Definitely. You're like, what the crack is that?
Exactly. Exactly. I don't know about that.
And I'm over it. I'm just learning, so not even out my front door.
Nice.
But I'm working on it.
Ad was asking, can your spirit be left somewhere or attached to someone different?
No. No, you, whenever you go into astral, and most people, especially when they're beginning, they will have a thread. And... you know, it's a thread that is attached, you know, to your body, to your astral body. So once you're out there in astral for so long, a lot of people are afraid of getting stuck out there, but it doesn't happen that way. A lot of times you'll go ahead and you'll fall into REM sleep and you'll wake up because your body just automatically comes back. It just follows that thread. However, if the thread was broke, you know, it would probably be possible for a person to be lost and lose their body, but it's not something that I've ever heard of happening.
Yeah, that scares the holy bejesus out of me. Like, I think I've accidentally astraled a couple times, and I kind of remind myself of, like, a drunk baby or whatever. Like, I can't get up off of all fours. I feel like I'm extremely drunk. And the last time it happened, I looked back and actually saw my body laying on the couch. And so I crawled back up to it and you know, rolled into it and then woke up. And I was like, wow, that was crazy. I thought I was actually probably dead for a minute. But, you know,
it does happen in sleep.
Yeah, and I've talked to people about it, and I'm like, I'm just really afraid to leave my body because I'm afraid either I won't find my way back or something will jump in there while I'm gone because things have been after me all my life. But then they explain, like, I don't know if it's the golden or silver thread that attaches your spirit to your body, so they don't fear that, but I still have that fear in my subconscious mind of, I'm going to get lost.
You know, basically... If you know, about the only way that I could imagine that you could really have that happen is if you somehow jumped yourself into another dimension and got lost there and weren't able to get back to your body, then you would probably just die. But I personally haven't heard of it happening.
That's good. Good to know.
Alluria. Starting to scare me here, guys.
Right. Don't think about it. Don't listen to me, Sam. I'm just paranoid.
La 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 la.
I can't hear you.
It is dangerous. There is no two ways about it. It is dangerous. There are dangers in doing it.
And that's just like with anything else in life, really.
Right. Yeah.
Right. There's dangers in driving your car to work. You know, it just depends on what you have to realize is that when you are in the astral, you know, you can make anything your imagination can develop. You can materialize that on the astral plane. So if you have a very active imagination, it's going to be very active there. You can make shields, you can make weapons, you can do things that are not humanly possible when you're in your body. Because I know I fall over, put my pants on, but I can fight in the astral plane. You know? So, you know, it's there's a lot more graceful you on the astral plane. So,
okay, because that was a bit TMI. Just saying.
I find myself anti graceful astral person because I always feel like I'm super drunk. I can't walk. I have to lean on things, or like the last time I was crawling around, falling over, and I think it's just because I don't have that, you know, that gift really yet. It was all unintentional and kind of beyond my control at that moment.
For some people, it just takes practice and. It is not uncommon for new people that don't have a very natural gift to it to have pretty much just that feeling right there.
Right, right. Have that drunken feeling and not feel that they can control it and things like that. And it takes work, you know. It's just like learning how to walk, you know. Mm-hmm. And you have to not think of things in a physical realm when you're in the astral plane. You got to remember, you can float, you can fly, you can go from one place to another in a matter of seconds. And, you know, what you're doing when you're crawling around in the astral is because you're trying to think too much of gravity. Gravity doesn't exist there. You create things there. So, you know, that wouldn't be a helpful thing to remember. So you don't have to walk, you can just float yourself around.
I'll have to remember that next time.
Thought forms are huge in the astral plane.
Right. Well, in the dream world, like, you know, you learn how to